feel the need to get up. We had a lot of intercessions, a lot to pray for. Three long readings, thank you for doing those. David's already told me he's going to sneak out. He may find that he needs to go to Winscombe earlier. Than if you need to get up and shake your hands and wiggle your feet, that's fine. There's so much in today's reading. I found there's so much in today's readings. I use the lectionary. I don't know how the lectionary committee gets together, but every week there's four readings set out. There's a bit of Old Testament, there's a psalm, there's a bit of gospel, and there's a bit from the New Testament. And I tend to use those because I found I was going back to my favourite passages. And there's a limit how many sermons you can do on Psalm 84, but I've got quite a lot of them. So I thought if you do the lectionary, you get more variety and you begin to get a pattern. This reading, today's readings come in a run. Sometimes it's really tricky. A few weeks ago, I just couldn't find anything linking the readings together. Sometimes there's one strong message from one of the passages. And then, like last week, it's the one you hate as a preacher. It's the one that everybody knows. It's a Good Samaritan. And then you find out, you get a passage that everyone knows. And you think, oh, yeah, I know what's going to happen. And you turn up and start thinking about everything else. Today's reading, we've only had three out of four, and there seems to be a linked message going through these. Some of the parables that Jesus told, everything stands for something. I mean, the classic one is the sower and the seed. You know, there's the seed that goes on the hard ground, seed that grows in the thistles, and seed that grows in the shallow ground, and the good seed. And everything represents something. And we have to think, well, who are we in that story? And we'd all hope to be the good seed, wouldn't we? So we can grow and grow and flourish and produce a ridiculous... it's dairy around here, isn't it? But in the parable of the good seed, it said it produced 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And I read that if you got 7 or 8 times the amount, that was pretty good farming. So to get 30-fold, it's just like ridiculous. God's goodness will flourish in ridiculously large amounts. That's what that parable was telling us. And then last week we had the Good Samaritan story. Who are we in that story? Think about the Good Samaritan story. Who reckons they're the robbers? Nope. Who reckons they're the priest or the Levite? See, we never write ourselves into the bad peoples, but even the not quite so bad people. Who thinks we'd like to be the Good Samaritan? Oh, nobody. Oh, no. Hope I don't have come off my bike in Rington there. Nobody's coming to my help. And today's story, who sympathises with Martha? Yes. Yeah. I think it's one of those stories. It's like, you know, the parable of the workers in the vineyard, where somebody worked all day long for a denarius, and some people just come along and work for 1 hour and get the same pay. I know what we're meant to think, but don't we all think that's not really very fair? And in this one, you know, where's Mary just sitting at Jesus' feet going? And Martha's been left with all the catering as usual. Don't we feel a little bit of sympathy for Martha? There's lots both in our Genesis reading and in the Luke reading about hospitality. And that was an important thing for nomadic society. And it taught, I don't know what it made a big thing at the beginning of the reading of the Tree of Mamre. I always wonder what the Tree of Mamre... holiday snaps time. Let's see if we can make this happen. Ooh. A few years ago, I went to Namibia. Now, Namibia isn't on there, so let's just roll the earth around a little bit. And roll it a bit further around. There we go. And there's Namibia with a giant arrow floating in across the ocean. And Namibia is basically two deserts with a road down the middle of them. And there's one place that we went to, it's a T-junction, a place called Solitaire. There's a road that comes up from the south, meets a road that goes across from the top. And it's called Solitaire. There it is, there's Solitaire. Can you see all the houses? There's about two. And it's called Solitaire because there's one tree there, and there it is. And it's a big place on Google Earth, Solitaire. That's the tree. And I always imagined that, you know, here's some huts, this is later on the holiday. This would be what Abraham and Sarah were staying in. They were staying in tents and they'd have found a little bit of shade somewhere. And I've had this amazing picture. This was painted by Neil Thorogood, the minister at Trinity Henley's, who's going to be our General Assembly moderator next year. And you can see, has this got a... No, it hasn't. Right up in the top right-hand corner, you've got the shadow of the three men. And there's Abraham gone out to meet him, and there's his tent down in the corner. Does that make sense? I like to picture things. It's like looking at maps. I like to look at them and imagine what it's like. And this is what I picture it's like. So let's leave those for now. These three visitors arrive at Abraham's tent, and Abraham really goes a bit over the top. Did you listen carefully to that reading? He gets three seahs of flour. That's 13.2 kilograms of flour. Now, I don't know about you. I make my own bread. And I use 1.5 kilos for 4 loaves. So 13.2 kilos is 9, that's 36 loaves of bread for three visitors. And notice that he welcomes them and gets Sarah to do the baking because she's in the tent. Very good. And then what does Abraham do? Well, he goes out and selects a tender calf and gets the servant to do all the butchery and making it. So we've got 36 loaves and a calf. That's a lot of beef sandwiches, it seems to me, for three visitors. And some yogurt and some milk. And you kind of, how long is this going to take? I mean, I get irritated you go in a coffee shop and you have to wait 5 minutes for your coffee to brew. So to make 36 loaves of bread and a calf's worth of sandwiches, it's going to take a while. But Abraham just stands back. There's all these preparations going on. And he waits and he listens and he gets a promise. So sometimes that sitting and waiting is important for the promises that's being given to him. And today's gospel passage, the story about Martha and Mary, comes straight after the parable of the Good Samaritan. And New Brunswick, they keep telling me off because they say, you're always saying read around the passage. And you think, well, the Good Samaritan is a nice story, but it comes quite shortly after James and John have asked Jesus if they can call down fire on a Samaritan village. They're on the way to Jerusalem for the final time. It's a key word in the beginning in Luke 9 where it says Jesus resolutely turned towards Jerusalem. He knew this would be his final journey there. And they're going through Samaria, and James and John go ahead to get things ready, and the Samaritan village says, no, we're not interested. Go, show off. Go. On your way, mate. Go to Cleve or somewhere like that. And James and John comes out really cross, and they say, shall we call down fire? And I thought, that's a bit extreme. You know, you could just give them like 1 star on TripAdvisor or something. But it reminded me just a chapter or so before that at the Transfiguration, where Jesus had gone up this mountain with Peter and James and John. And Jesus had been glorified. He'd been affirmed by God. This is my son, listen to him. And he'd appeared with Moses and Elijah. David, you know this because you've done training. How did they know it was Moses and Elijah? They got badges on. I am Elijah. Yeah, and got photos. But the thing I most remember about Elijah was when he had that battle with the prophets of Baal and they're up a mountain and he called down fire on his sacrifice. And I thought maybe that's the link then. That's why James and John are now saying a chapter later in the story, shall we call down fire on the Samaritan village? And Jesus says, no, if they're not ready for it, we'll just pass on. And there's a link there the Samaritan village doesn't come out very well, but then a chapter later, Jesus is telling this story about a Samaritan who really is showing what a neighbour means. It's full of praise for the person who did act this time, even though it's an unexpected person, this Samaritan. And there's lots of doing word. If you read the passage we did last week of the Good Samaritan, lots of doing things. He sees, he goes, he binds up, he pays, he promises to return to pay for anything else. Full of action. And then we get to today's story that's half full of action. It's Mary's action and Martha's action. Actually, I do like the word Martha read by a good Bristolian accent. That was lovely. Martha. Thank you. We get Martha doing lots of action and Mary doing nothing but sitting listening. And it's very easy to do an either or, to know we really ought to be like Mary, but actually we're more like Martha a lot of the time. Maybe we need to avoid that. Maybe the obvious answer isn't the full one. Maybe the other lectionary reading, you can read, sorry, I was a teacher, set homework, old habits don't, but read Psalm 15, talking about walking blamelessly. Maybe if we're walking blamelessly, we shouldn't be pointing the finger at either of them, really. And after all, it was Martha that invited Jesus and his disciples into her house. And Jesus doesn't criticise Martha for what she's doing. Jesus had called in for a tea break, and Martha was expecting to savour a full-blown meal. And Jesus isn't going to reprimand one of his co-hosts. But all her preparation is distracting Martha from one thing. Remember, Jesus was on his final way to Jerusalem. He came to spend time with them. Not to have an elaborate meal, to spend time to be with them and to teach them. I sometimes think of the times I have had people around to eat. You know, it's quite good when more than the first people arrive because they can talk to each other and I can carry on faffing about in the kitchen. And you think, I've invited all these people around, I haven't really talked to them yet. Was that the situation that was happening here? And it reminded me of this. Let's see if this works.
I won't have a cup.
Are you sure
now? No, I'm not in the mood, thanks.
All right, so. I go on, would you not have a drop?
No, thanks anyway,
just
Mrs.
A
Doyle.
Cup.
I'm fine. No, really.
I'll tell you what, Father. I'll pour
seriously.
A cup for you anyway. And you can have it if you want.
Mrs. Doyle is so intent on pouring her cup of tea, she's not listening to what anyone's saying to her. And she just carries on pouring the tea, whether people want it or not. Was Martha doing that? And it's probably, if we're honest, what most of us are like in the URC, most of us are like in our lives. We want to be doing things in response to our faith. And we feel a bit guilty if we're not doing something. We've got to be doing things. And maybe we need to say to ourselves, let's just take time to sit and listen. And generally, I guess, we're getting worse at it. I don't know how. It's been very good. I've not noticed anyone going... How long can we go without checking our phones to see if somebody important has texted us? There's a phrase I read recently about a YouTube habit. It's called continuous partial attention. We're never really paying attention to something because something else might be cropping up on our phone. On TikTok, we're all too old for TikTok, aren't we? TikTok. It's down to a minute. You get about a minute and that's your attention span, which is pretty good going for quite a few teenagers. How often do we give God our full attention in our busy lives? When did we really make time to sit and wait and listen to what he's saying to us? And I thought maybe we could do that now. Maybe we could just have a time of quiet, a couple of minutes. And in those couple of minutes, offer yourself to God and listen. And I'll tell you when the 2 minutes are up. So let's be quiet. And just listen to nothing, but offer ourselves to God and see if he's speaking to us. How was that time? That was 2 minutes. Were you a bit anxious that we could just get on with it a bit? Were you thinking, actually, I could do with a coffee? Were you thinking about what you're going to do for the rest of the day? Or were you focusing on listening to God? How many things went through your mind during that 2 minutes? And maybe we do need to... This is where preachers offload their own failings and say we instead. Maybe we do need to work on the Mary side of ourselves. And I haven't even mentioned the Colossians reading yet. It's kind of famous, apart from the fact I always hear read around the passage at New Brunswick, that I have a bit of a thing about Ephesians. I do like Ephesians. When I look back, it was because I did a series of sermons that took about 14 months to go through Ephesians. It wasn't every week, don't worry. When I look back, it was in 1992. So they're still hanging on 30 years later. I have a thing about Ephesians. But actually, Colossians, more homework. Once you've read Psalm 15, read through Colossians. It's quite short, but it really is succinct about putting over the gospel. And to set the scene for today's readings, we need a couple of verses earlier. Verse 13, God rescued us and brought us into the kingdom of his Son. And then the first six verses we got in our reading, it's apparently in the Greek, it's even set out like a hymn, you know, lines that all scan and everything. And it explains why Jesus is supreme. He's the creator, he's the head of the church, like the head of a body. That all good's fullness, that's a really key word in Colossians, fullness, dwells in him. And then we get verses 21 to 23. We need to take out the good news. And there's a couple of times in the Bible I find it frustrating what it's missed out. There's a time on Easter Sunday evening where the two disciples are going from Jerusalem to Emmaus. I like to picture that. It's just about the distance from Rington to Winscombe. And these disciples set out from Rington, you can imagine, at the end of the afternoon on Easter Sunday. And they get down to the A38 and a stranger meets them and they walk all the way to Winscombe. Are you going to walk to Winscombe? Are you taking the... No, you can borrow my bike if you like. It's a bit wet. But so on that journey from the A38 down to Winscombe, this stranger, who is Jesus, but they haven't realised yet, is explaining how the Old Testament is pointing towards him. Well, why didn't they write it down? That would have been a most amazing sermon. Well, there's a time where Philip meets the Ethiopian in Acts chapter 8, and the Ethiopian's been reading a verse from Isaiah 53. And starting at that, Philip then unpacks the whole gospel of Jesus. But we don't know what he said. It would have been so frustrating. It would be lovely if he'd written down what he said to him. But verses 21 to 23 of the first chapter of Colossians is a beautifully succinct summing up of the gospel. The good news that we should be taking out. Once we were alienated from God, but Jesus has reconciled us to God by the sacrifice he made at Easter. Hold on to the hope that this faith gives and proclaim it. That's the gospel we should hold on to. That's the gospel we should take out. One of my granddads used to talk about the Westminster Catechism. It's a thing he did when he was little. The Westminster Shorter Catechism. It was shorter meant there were 107 questions and 107 spiritual answers for children. And I love this bit in the introduction, for people of weaker capacity. 107, that's the weaker ones. And I have only ever heard of number one of these 107, so I must be exceptionally weak capacity. But the first question, this is what you have to learn to understand the faith. Question one, what is the chief end of man? And we now say man and women. Yeah, what is the chief end of us? Answer: man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. I thought it was a lovely phrase, especially from Scots people, enjoying things. Not specifically your chief aim, your chief end is to read the Bible and study it forever, although it does help us understand more of God's plan for us. Not specifically to spend a certain amount of time in prayer, not to do X number of good things every day. They're all there as consequences, but our chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Isn't that great? And then there was an odd bit I even got queried as to whether I should have included this bit. Verse 24, Paul says, "Now I fill up in my flesh what is still lacking in regards to Christ's afflictions." What's lacking? I thought, that sounds like Easter wasn't enough. What's lacking? Something else needs topping up. But it made me think, once I'd done a bit of reading around it, it's one of those times where words change. You know, when I was a kid and we used to sing at Easter, "There is a green hill far away without a city wall." And I thought, why do you need a city wall round a hill? I mean, you've got a hill. Why do you need a... And the word "without" then meant outside. Like if you go into Bristol, you've heard of Bristol, it's a big town over there. And there's a church there, St Michael on the Mount Without. It's not without, and it's outside the city wall. Interestingly, it's part of how Bristol is laid out for the working man or woman to understand their gospel. You'll very often find a St Michael's church just outside the city to the north, because in biblical times, often the Assyrians and other raiders came from the north, and St Michael is the archangel who defends you. So you have a St Michael's just outside. There's a St Stephen's church literally just outside the city wall, because Stephen was dragged out of the city and stoned. So all these churches are laid out to help you understand your Bible. Well, back to Easter. Sorry, squirrel. No, distracted. Sorry, if you haven't seen the film Up, it's more about squirrels in it. Oh, you've seen the film Up. Squirrel. "There is a green hill far away without a city wall" doesn't mean the hill hadn't got a wall. It meant it was outside the city wall. Psalm 23, "The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want." I shall not want what? I shall not want a cup of tea. I shall not want a nice biscuit with my cup of tea. What it means there, the word "want" is to lack something. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall lack nothing." The word now has changed slightly. And I was finding it difficult to find an image to make me understand what Paul was saying was, "I fill up what's lacking in regard to Christ's afflictions." Because I thought, surely Easter did it all. And the best I could come up with this, when I was a student, I was ancient times, in those days W.H. Smith had a second branch type of shop called Craftsmith, where there's all crafty things in them. And one thing, especially this time of year, beginning of the school holidays, parents could buy a huge poster in a tube with a very intricate drawing on it, which would come with a pack of 480 million felt tip pens. And you could give this giant picture to your child on the first day of the holidays and these 480 million felt tip pens, and that should occupy them for the whole summer. Pretty cool. The picture was there, the picture was complete, the picture had been drawn in black and white, but children could then add to it their own choice of colours into the things. What Christ has done for us at Easter is the complete story, but we bring our responses, we bring our actions to that to fill it out, to make even more sense of that picture. In our Martha-ness, Jesus calls us now and then to stop and to listen to him. Maybe via Bible study, maybe in prayer, maybe just being still. And he does that so that we can glorify him and enjoy him and all that means for us forever. Amen.